Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play, only at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
What would you do with 30 extra minutes a day? With LG, that time starts coming back. LG appliances are built to make everyday life feel lighter. With LG, fewer laundry mistakes, fresher groceries, and easier cleanup add up to more time back. 30 extra minutes isn't just time saved, it's breakfast without rushing, dinner without stress, and one less thing to juggle. Smart performance, sleek style, and reliability for real life, that's LG. Get your time back with LG. See the latest models and savings now at LG.com.
Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We're streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. And we are broadcasting from the busy B Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. So one massive topic that we're going to be talking about throughout the next couple of weeks and months as Barry Trotz answers some questions about the Nashville Predators, how he decides to build this team moving forward, is of course going to be about the goaltending situation. The options that the Predators have with UC Saros, do you decide to re-sign him? Do you decide to trade him? Do you decide to go into this season with UC Saros unsigned and then just kind of figure it out at the trade deadline or potentially even at the end of this upcoming season? A lot of big decisions facing Barry Trotz.
And I think we want to try to broaden it because the goalie part is a huge part of the formula. But I think the essential question, too, is how do you build a championship roster? Mm-hmm. And I don't know that there's one answer. But we've all had a lot of theories, but it's a great question because just like when you read Sean McIndoe's assessment of how you get the great goalie, and it was comical. That's kind of his thing.
He called it one simple rule, and it was about six or seven lines
right.
of conditions and if it was this, then that, and this, and that. The truth remains, if the formula to win a Stanley Cup was in fact a formula, everybody would do it.
Yep.
Everyone would do it, and it's really not that simple. So we got to bring in the expert on the situation. Adam Vinken joins us now in studio. Adam, it's great to have you, and it's great to see you.
Thanks for having me back.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, Willie, you said that the two of you have been going at it over the past couple of days via text. You've been breaking down some things that you wanted to touch on. Maybe going at it maybe is a little bit too dramatic for me to say.
Willie and I never really go at it. Yeah. Willie and I never really go at it.
Some very scholarly discussions.
Yes. We have challenging questions back and forth to one another.
Yeah. Willie and I approach these sorts of discussions the same way. We try to stay level-headed. We try to bring plenty of evidence to to back up our points. We're both willing to give and take. If someone makes a good point, we're willing to concede.
District Attorney Donick is what Willie has been affectionately called.
Yes, Kenny the Mailman
program.
Called me the D.A. Donick the other day.
It does roll off the tongue.
It does. It does sound nice. It
sounds like a 1980s procedural or something.
It does. Yeah, right. Yeah. I think our show came on after MacGyver or The Fall Guy or something like that.
D.A. Donick.
Wearing a three-piece brown suit.
Yeah.
I can see that.
And then
mustache.
the sound effect of a jail cell closing.
The hair was still there, but maybe receding a little bit.
He'll solve any crime by dinner time.
But I think when we listen to Barry Trotz talk about how he's going to try to take the team to the next level, we all agree that they can't stand pat. They had a good season. They've gotten a certain amount of the way. But just like a lot of teams in a lot of eras, you're trying to figure out what is it that's going to take you to the top of the mountain. And so what is the best way to go from here? Is it to reinvest in a goalie you know is really good, pay him a little more? Or take, in my mind, a little more of a risk, trade him, use those resources to try to address the roster in different places. We've looked at, and this is what Adam and I debate on a lot, we've looked at a lot of different examples of teams and how they've tried to do it, and it's mixed results. A lot of people do center in on the fact that Colorado and Vegas have won recent Stanley Cups without a bell cow number one goalie that they paid a lot of money. Tampa did pay a superstar goalie, superstar money, and won. Still had enough resources with the rest of their roster to win. So there's no one answer. what's the best way? That is where we're spending a lot of time debating. So let me start it with this, Adam. Carolina is a great case study. Mm-hmm. Just got eliminated last night in heartbreaking fashion.
That was rough to watch.
They were ahead 3-1. They are on the verge of forcing a game seven after being down 3-0. And they collapsed in the third period in front of their home crowd, lost the series. So now they are finishing up a six-year run where they've been really good every year. And I got the stat wrong yesterday, but 6 years, this is what Sean McDonough said during the Game 5 victory they had, that nobody has ever had six better years and not made it to at least the Stanley Cup final. I said conference final. You corrected me on that. But that is going to be the question that everybody wonders, because now it looks like they're going to have to break up their team. They got a lot of huge – they won't be the same next year. So this window is probably done. They've won a lot of rounds of playoffs, but they've never got to the top. And I point out to Adam that they've never had the great goalie that they have invested in. They've tried a number – we just listed them all. How many different guys have started playoff games during the 6 years?
Seven.
Seven different guys.
It's an interesting list, and I have it in front of me. This is not, and then I think I listed it in order of how many starts. So from most starts to fewest. Antti Raanta, Freddie Anderson, Peter Mrazek, Alex Nedeljkovic, who started for the Hurricanes in the series against the Predators a few years ago, Curtis McElhinney, James Reimer, and is it how do you pronounce it?
Piotr Kochetkov.
Who's a young goalie. I knew it was Kochetkov.
I think hope becomes something good.
Yes. So they've gone through seven goalies. And to be fair to you about the conference final, Stanley Cup final, the two times that the Hurricanes have made it to the conference final under Rod Brind'Amour, they've been swept both times. They were swept by the Bruins in 2019 and swept by the Panthers last year. So although they made it to the conference final, they haven't won any conference final games. So
I would present to you, that's an example to me of, if I'm Rod Brind'Amour, I'm kind of lamenting, if I just had better goaltending for one of those years. And you can roll the dice and hope that a James Reimer or somebody plays great.
Anderson, from the time he got back from his blood clotting issue in March through really this series against the Rangers, he was outstanding.
Yes.
Absolutely
He's
outstanding.
Had some really good statistical years for sure, but I've never considered him a A-level goalie.
No, he's a solid B.
No question.
He's a B-plus player. For you wrestling fans out there. Anyway, my counter argument to, I mean, I think your point is well taken about the Hurricanes goalies, because you're right. They've had solid goalies, but never the guy. I mean, that's why they've had to go through seven goalies, and some of those guys only started a handful of games. But in terms of starters, not anyone really stands out in that group. My counter would be, I think the problem for the Hurricanes has been a problem similar to what the Predators have had in recent years when they've been considered a contender, is that the Hurricanes have struggled to find finishers up front. They have really good players up front. You think of Sebastian Aho, Andrei Svechnikov, Seth Jarvis looks like he's going to be a really good player. But they've always struggled. They've struggled to find that forward or forwards who can consistently put the puck in the back of the net. Think of the chances they had to win that game last night that they barely missed.
Yep.
They hit the post a few times. I think Aho went wide on the backhand after two Rangers players collided. That's why when the Hurricanes acquired Jake Guentzel at the trade deadline, it was seen as a big deal, because it was the Hurricanes finally addressing the one thing that they hadn't really addressed all these years they were in the postseason: finding a player with a proven track record of putting pucks in the net. So the goaltending problem is there. I'm not discounting that. My counter argument would be, for as good as the Hurricanes have been and the points that their forwards have been able to put up, they have not been able to find that one or two guys who can consistently put the puck in the net, which is the problem I think most people associate with the Predators.
Right. I do think they come at you in waves with a lot of very good players.
Yes. They don't have
the freakish forward, the game-changing guy.
They are a quantity over quality team offensively. Mm-hmm. They just throw the puck at the net as much as they can and hope for a couple of breaks, versus the Rangers, who are more of the quality over quantity. They look for those grade A scoring chances.
They have high-end guys, and they do have the high-end goalie. You can definitely say in this series, I would argue that Shesterkin were it not for his greatness, I think Carolina might have had enough to beat them.
Yeah, I mean,
because Shesterkin, they got outshot, they got outchanced, they got outpossessioned in almost all of those games.
Yeah, they had a
but
big.
They have the playmakers,
mm-hmm.
and they have the goalie.
Yes, you've got, and look, you know, they've got, as you said, they've got a great mix. The Rangers do of high end to elite, different types of forwards. You know, like you said, playmakers like Mika Zibanejad, great player. We saw what Chris Kreider has been able to do. He did it last night.
It's Panarin.
Panarin. Lafreniere is broke out.
That's the thing that the Rangers
year.
Got. They won the lottery.
Yes.
When
that was during 2020.
That was really not winning the lottery. Different type of lottery.
Right.
Where everybody.
The Predators were.
The Predators could have won the lottery with the same chances of winning the lottery for Lafreniere.
Yes. And all so the teams that lost in the qualifying round that year had an opportunity at the number
so
one.
So they got you got to get a little lucky too.
Yes,
I think that's an essential thing to point out when we talk about the quote unquote formula that isn't really a formula for winning a Stanley Cup. Luck's involved in it as well.
You got to get,
and
luck.
That's frustrating.
Rod Brind'Amour, I don't know if you heard this guys last night, but the post game press conference, it was clearly a Carolina reporter sort of trying to set the stage for the disappointment, saying you've won all these games, you've had great seasons. And you added Dmitry Orlov, and you added Gensel, and you still can't get through the second round. How disappointing. He goes, Brind'Amour goes, we lost to the President's Trophy winning team. We lost to the best team in hockey. It's hard to win. Like, how much of it is they're not good enough, and how much of it is these are two really good teams. Somebody had to lose. That's the hard part about this, because every year there's teams like that feel like you have
teams.
A team that's good enough to win, but you find yourself out in the first or second round because you've lost to another team that's just as good.
Vegas.
Vegas is out in the first round. They loaded up, right? They were out in the first round. They lost to a really good Dallas team. That's the challenge, right? And you gotta wear it.
The difference, I think, between Vegas and Carolina is Vegas won their cup. You know, you can swallow that a little bit easier. They had their year. Carolina has continued to just get to that point, and they're constantly knocking on the door, but they just can't break through. And so that's why that conversation, I think, is fair to ask of, yeah, you ran into the President's Trophy winning New York Rangers this year, but it happened last year. And it happened the year before.
It's a little Toronto-ish, but even though they have won way more rounds than Toronto, they've won at least one round, Adam, in all but one of those years, right?
They've
consistently
won at least one
winning the first
round
and then falling short in the second or the third round.
Yes. They've won the
Toronto would probably love to have that kind of success. But
they have
at the same
won the
time,
playoff round every
they
year
haven't won.
Brind'Amour.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, like they have that six, like they can say, you know, we've made it to the postseason 6 years in a row. We've won at least a round every year. We've won multiple rounds twice. So, yeah, like, a lot of teams would sign up for that.
Yeah.
Like,
Toronto will maybe go to great lengths to try to get Rod Brind'Amour, whose contract is up.
Yeah.
Right?
So, it is a really interesting conversation. And, you know, as I'm watching that game, I'm thinking to myself, as I just said to you before, you know, I think of the chance that I think Jordan Staal had a shot right in the inner slot with the puck just bounced right to him, and Shesterkin made the save, and they showed Staal on the bench muttering him to himself. They had so many opportunities in that game last night. If they just were able to put the puck 1 inch the other way, it could have been a whole different story. But that's really been the story of the Carolina Hurricanes, in my opinion, is for as good as they are as a team, up and down, great depth, they just never have had that one or two guys like your McKinnons or your – I'm using extreme examples here, but your McKinnons and your McDavids and Draisaitls and Eichels and those guys that are consistently putting pucks in the net. And that's something that they're going to have to really think about. As you said, so much turnover for the Hurricanes. But I think that problem for the Hurricanes is similar to the problem that the Predators have had in recent years.
So when we talk about this, you know, more specifically to the Predators, because – Willie brought up the Shane McIndoe article in The Athletic, and it was looking at every playoff team's goaltender situation. Every single one of them is different. It's the veteran or the young agent Shelov's example. It's the third string guy that just so happens to be getting the job done. It's a UC Saros that has been playing really well, but they just came up against a good Vancouver Canucks team and the team around him wasn't good enough. Like, all of these different rules, stipulations, things that we've learned about the goaltending position that doesn't even get you anywhere close to a conclusion of how you find a Stanley Cup winning goaltender and how you win a Stanley Cup around the goaltender as well. We do know that one seemingly proven path to a Stanley Cup is having that elite goal scorer, having that elite forward. Now, it's not perfect. Auston Matthews has not won a cup in Toronto. Connor McDavid has not won a cup, at least yet, in Edmonton. So
he's proven. He's in trouble now.
Yeah, he is in trouble now. So when it comes to the Predators and we're addressing that question that is going to be hovering around this team over the next few years is how do you build a Stanley Cup contending roster?
Yeah.
And ideally, you have both, right? It, like, as Robbie Stanley and you pointed out when I was bringing up Vasilevsky's caller said, when's the last time a team had a great goalie that won the Cup? And I said, immediately, Vasilevsky. And you guys pointed out, well, they also had Kucherov and Stamkos and Hedman. So they had both.
Mm-hmm.
But they've been paying Vasilevsky $9.5 million for a while, and they've won at a big level with the goalie making a lot of money. And
so
that's what a lot of people.
Where do you find the Kucherovs and the Stamkoses? And
yeah, and they had to be really bad to pick high enough to get Stamkos and Hedman. So it's an interesting mix of how they did it. But I'll throw it to you, Adam, on, you know, obviously you want both, but let's look at the final four this year. You're going to have the Rangers and the Panthers. Both have pretty substantial investment in the goalies right now. And the Rangers, I would imagine, are not going to talk about trading Shesterkin anytime soon. They're probably going to re-up him without even batting an eye and pay him, I don't know what you think he's going to get, Adam, but I think he'd probably get north of eight. If down the street, Sorokin gets 8.25, Countryman, I think Shesterkin is probably going to get higher than that. And deservedly so, especially if he's gotten him this far. Because that's what he's got in his back pocket. He's saying, I've taken you deep in the playoffs. He's going to, without a doubt, set the bar, mm-hmm. I think. And you've got Bobrovsky for the Panthers, who makes $10 million a year, and they still have enough to put a really good roster in front of him. Then you have either Dallas or the Avs. The Avs are a team that we have circled as they've tried to go cheap on the goalie to a degree. They've had musical chairs there because they have the super freaks at the top of their lineup. And then you have Dallas, who is Ottinger.
First round pick,
who I think they're going to probably re-up this summer, too, for a big raise. Mm-hmm. Was he make four right now?
I don't know off the top of my head.
I think he makes four.
Between Ottinger and Shesterkin, and is Swayman due a contract, too?
He's a restricted free agent.
Okay.
Yes. And Ullmark, the other guy they have, has got 1 year left. And there's a lot of speculation they will trade him.
I feel like the goalie market's going to be reset quite a bit this summer.
And that's something we haven't talked about much, but that will affect the Saros talks.
Yeah, we've talked about Hellebuck as a contract comparison for Saros. We've also used Sorokin, but you're going to probably have to use Shesterkin too, and you might have to use Ottinger. You mean depending on when everybody signs? If UC Saros signs after those two.
Especially with Shesterkin being almost the same age as Saros.
So you might have to add at least two more contracts to that list so that you might have Sorokin, Hellebuck, Ottinger, and Shesterkin as the contract comparables for Saros. And I mean, that's going to push Saros's value up for sure.
We will continue this conversation coming up next, and Adam will stick around with us as well. Do you want to address a couple of questions that Willie has asked us fairly? Look, if it's not Saros, if you're going to trade Saros, then who's it going to be? And if you're going to trade Saros, what do you get in return? And that's not an easy question to answer because trades of this caliber just don't happen very frequently in the NHL. So we'll get into that coming up next, the Saros trade dilemma. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, we are brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, they join Cromwell Media along with local athletes and musicians at Hermitage Golf Course on June 20th for the 615 Open. Make a difference while supporting Souls for Souls. Every $20 raised goes to a new pair of shoes for a local child experiencing homelessness. So sign up to play or sponsor at 615open.com. Adam Vingan is in studio with us for the entirety of the noon hour. Now, Adam, we got to get to the juicy stuff. We got to get to the important stuff.
The juicy stuff or the juicy stuff?
That's fair. Both.
Did you mean to do that?
I didn't.
Okay, let's pretend that you did.
But the juicy, juicy stuff.
I was about to commend you.
Thank you. I did plan to do that, actually. The Uzi Sara situation. If you were in Barry Trotz's shoes, how would you move forward with the goaltender?
So I am not a part of the Avengers, as Willie and Derek and I guess
C-Mace is in there.
Chris and I think Ian's in there too.
We're trying to recruit Ian. Ian has said he wants to be an Avenger.
He is in there initially. That was just a mix-up from D-Mace.
Okay, so I am not a part of the Avengers. I am a member of the Move On from UC Soros crew. And I've thought about it a lot. I've listened to a lot of what you guys have talked about, not just the two of you and Derek, but I've listened to what Robbie and Joe have had to say and what Jared has had to say, and we've all kind of talked amongst ourselves. And you know, your point, Willie, about the rising salary cap is well taken, that if you sign Soros to a big money contract, the percentage of the cap that that's going to take up when it comes into effect in two seasons from now, in 2025-26, it won't take up a whole lot of space, or a lot of space comparatively. That I understand. For me, it's less about that and more about just the timing of things contractually. I think that when UC Soros arrived in the NHL as a full-time player in 2016-17, you know, Pekka Rinne was about to be 34 years old. He was still playing at a high level, but he was about to be 34 years old. He was in the fifth year of that seven-year contract. So he was, as I've said to you before, he was closer to the end of his career than the beginning. Still a good player, but closer to the end of his career. The timing just worked out because you had those 3 years left on Rinne's long-term deal. He did sign another short-term deal after that. But the timing was right so that they could take their time with Soros and develop him, and he could, you know, sit under the learning tree of Pekka Rinne for several years. It just worked out well that way. This situation does not work out as well because, let's say, Yaroslav Askarov needs one more season in the American League before he's a full-time NHL player. So let's say next season, he's in the American League most of the time, and he becomes a full-time NHL player in 2025-26.
Right, which in theory would be the first year of a new Soros contract.
Correct. And let's assume, again, we're doing a lot of assuming
Soros
here.
Soros would be age 30.
He would be
just
30.
Just like Pekka Rinne was age 30 when he started. The long-term contract, the 7x7.
Yes. So Soros would be 30 at the start of that season, the season of the first year of his contract. And again, we're doing a lot of assuming here. But let's assume, again, that Soros remains as high quality of a goaltender as Pekka Rinne did. So let's say he's still a starting caliber goalie until he's 35 years old, at least. That way you're through most of the contract, and Askarov is still there, presumably, as a backup. I just don't think it's the right. I just don't think it's the right method for using that potential asset. As I said to Caroline when we filled in for Jared recently, the town isn't big enough for both of them. I think you have to commit to one and then move to the other, move away from the other. So if you re-sign Soros to a long-term contract, I think you have to move Askarov. If you decide that the Askarov is going to be your starter down the road, you have to move on from Soros. That means you'll have to sign a bridge starter for 1 or 2 years probably. But I don't, just the timing of the contracts do not make as much sense to me as they did for Rinne and Soros, which was really a perfect situation.
It was.
From a contractual situation. This is not that. And I just think, I was thinking about this the other day. We talked about this too. The idea of the mystery box, so to speak. I remember somewhat. I believe it. What season did Elli Tolvanen come over at the end? Which season was that?
Elli Tolvanen came over during the 2017-18 season.
Okay.
When he played in the Winter Olympics. He tore up the KHL.
Right.
The
he
Predators
made his
had,
debut late in that season, correct?
I believe so, 2018. Yeah.
Okay. So
And he only played like three games. It was a lot of hype for really nothing. He wasn't ready.
But therein lies the point. I remember there were reports rumors, whatever you want to call it, going around at the trade deadline that year.
Yes.
That perhaps the Predators would be willing to move Elli Tolvanen. And it's because, as you said, the hype was high around Tolvanen because of all of the things he did on the international level. Now, Askarov has been in the American League for a few years, but has shown a lot of potential. I'm thinking that if you're going to move Askarov soon, you want to do it sooner rather than later, because there's still that mystery element to Askarov,
like Tolvanen in 2018.
Correct.
Okay.
That's
an interesting thought.
That imagine if the Predators had, like, obviously the Predators didn't know what Tolvanen was going to become, and it didn't work out here, and he's carved himself a nice middle six role with the Seattle Kraken. But he's
a good player.
He was never going to live up to the hype that we thought that was going to be there when he got here, or before he got here. So I'm wondering, if you're going to trade Askarov, you need to do it soon while that mystery element still presents itself. Because if you get too much film on him, so to speak, then you might not get as much value. But my point is, you have to commit to one, in my opinion. If you re-sign Saros, you have to move Askarov. If you're convinced that Askarov is almost ready, whether it's next year or the year after that, probably the year after that, then I don't think it's wise to sign Saros to a long-term deal. I think you have to choose.
Well, I think the Tolvanen example is a fascinating one, because I was looking at Tolvanen in comparison to Tomasino, but going back when Tolvanen was the exciting unknown, the mystery box, the NHL players didn't play in the Winter Olympics, so they sent a group of younger players.
Yes.
And he tore it up for Finland. He did an amazing job in the KHL. Yeah,
didn't he have a hat trick in his first game?
There were so many highlights coming over.
Right. It was a big deal. We were all on Tolvanen watch every day.
We were checking KHL Twitter sites, like, to see the highlights of what Tolvanen was doing.
We were seeing what the results of his KHL team's playoff games were. So it's like he could come as soon as X date or X date.
Like he wanted them to lose so he could come over.
Like I told Willie the other day, my favorite all-time Jared take is that Elli Tolvanen's floor was Philip Forsberg.
Is that better or worse than his Treylon Burks has more natural talent than A.J. Brown? Is that the take too?
That take confuses me. I mean, Jared and Joe have hashed that one out for so long, and I still step away from it like, what? But the Elli Tolvanen one, that one was a doozy.
So
but just to give context to how much hype there really was.
There was a lot of hype.
There was a lot.
Therein lies the double-edged sword, because if you're going to trade UC Saros and put all of your stock in Askarov, isn't that the cautionary tale of Tolvanen has turned out to be a steady, good top nine forward? I think that's a fair definition.
Yes,
right?
he's like a third line player for the Kraken, but they have a good third line
with a unique skill set, with a very good shot. That on a given year, I think he could probably get 20 goals. There's nothing to sneeze at there, right? He's useful, but he is not the franchise. And I think Askarov could end up being a franchise goalie, but he also could end up being just an okay player. And so your point is well taken, but isn't that to me is why I like nothing is a sure thing. I like what I know about Saros, and I'm willing to reinvest in that. And if Askarov keeps growing, I still think you could trade him if he progresses. But I'm also insured if he does turn into just kind of a blah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is the flip side of that.
There is a chance that you don't get anything big for a trade of one or the other. I'm willing to say that that's a distinct possibility, but yes. I still will have Saros.
That's the gamble.
I would still have Saros in my plan.
The problem would have been solved. I'm sorry, Caroline.
No, go ahead.
The problem would have been solved. I said this to Jared the other day. The problem would have been solved if I recall correctly, Barry Trotz I think he confirmed it without like completely confirming. I don't remember. But like, remember, there were reports around the draft last year that the Predators were willing to move on from Askarov to get into the top five of the draft.
Yes. Yep. Imagine, that was widely rumored.
Yes. Imagine if none of this problem would be solved if the San Jose Sharks took Askarov to give up the number four pick, the Predators, assuming they picked the same player as the Sharks, which is Will Smith, would have had that young center that they could finally have, yes, you know, build around. And then you don't have to worry about this Askarov or Saros, because Askarov is gone, then you re-sign Saros. Like, if the Sharks or the Canadiens would have just taken the deal, none of this would have happened.
If everybody just cooperated, everything would. And that's the difficult situation, is the gamble that you're going to have to take one way or another. And both of the both roads, I believe, are a risk. Both roads are a gamble. And I'll use an NFL example.
I ask, what's the bigger gamble? Because don't you guys agree that the most people that believe it's, let's trade Saros, mm-hmm, do it with the assumption that Askarov is going to turn into something special? Yes. Didn't we all think that Tolvanen was going to be something special?
If you didn't think that Askarov was going to be something
right.
special.
But he just makes a great point. I think all of us thought, with the hype, similar kind of hype, that I thought Tolvanen was going to be special.
I look at, to use an NFL example, you brought up Treylon Burks. That was the example of moving on from the proven thing to go to the young thing that's cheaper and promising. It didn't work out. The Minnesota Vikings did something very similar when they traded Stephon Diggs and then drafted Justin Jefferson with the 16th overall pick at the 2020 draft. That ended up being a really smart move. I know it's not the same thing, and I know we're working in two different salary caps,
working
with two different sports, but the philosophy is sometimes it works and you look like a genius. When the Vikings traded Stephon Diggs, I was like, are you serious? What are you doing? Stephon Diggs is one of the best receivers in the National Football League. Well, now they got a younger, better version of Stephon Diggs. The Titans now find themselves in a really bad position offensively and at the wide receiver position because they made that same risk. It's a risk that Barry Trotz is going to have to evaluate, and a risk, you know, one way or another, that he's going to have to make. But that's the tough decisions that you have to make as a general manager. Sometimes they're decisions that you have to stake your job on. That if Barry Trotz decides to trade UC Saros and Yaroslav Askarov becomes the next Igor Shesterkin, and you get a haul back for UC Saros that turns into, you know, a couple of top line forwards, he's going to look like a genius. If he trades Saros, Askarov isn't very good. Saros wins a Stanley Cup, and then you are just back in the mushy middle, if not worse than you were. He'll probably get fired. That's the scary balance that you have to kind of look at from the outside looking in. But from Barry Trotz's perspective, it always has to go back to, I'm making this decision because it makes us a Stanley Cup contender, or at least closer to becoming a Stanley Cup contender. And the tough thing is, that's the foundation of the question is, which one gets you closer to becoming a Stanley Cup contender?
Okay, so Adam, the other pieces to the equation in your trade Saros, who is the alternative? Who is the, in the meantime, goalie? Because that, to me, is a big, big part. Because I, especially with the roster the way it is now, with O'Reilly and a lot of young 30-year-old something guys, I don't want to take a huge step back. The gamble would be, maybe I can get good, solid level goaltending and improve my firepower. But I still have to have solid goaltending. I can't take a step back. So who is the other goalie? Especially if we all kind of agree the direction it's moving is they don't think Askarov is ready to start, maybe even as the backup next year. He's certainly not ready to start 50 games next year. So you need somebody to pick up the slack if Saros is not in the picture.
Why can't it be Kevin Lankinen?
Well, it can be Kevin Lankinen. Yeah. So here's what I would say, and I'm a big fan of Kevin Lankinen, and I think he's better than a lot of some of the other potential UFAs that are out there. Lauren Brossois, Kaapo Kähkönen, Ilya Samsonov.
And I think
Alex Nedeljkovic.
I think that Lankinen's career high in starts is like 37 or 38 when he was with Chicago. So he hasn't started. I mean, it's not even half a season.
Yeah.
But he does have experience being a starting goaltender.
He is the devil you know. He is a guy that I think lights up all the boxes in professional work ethic. Is he going to keep himself in shape? Would he relish the chance to be a starter? All of that is yes.
And I've been impressed by him from afar because I remember I was sitting in with Robbie when they signed him and we were both like, what are they doing? Like, this guy is bad. But then, you know, but we were also leaving the door open to that, well, he's bad because he's playing behind this Blackhawks team. And behind a better team, he's been pretty good. Like, I mean, I think he is a serviceable bridge starter, whether it's 1 year or two. I think Lankinen. I would put my vote down for Lankinen for a year or two.
Okay, so Lankinen for let's say 50 games,
mm-hmm.
and I guess are you taking the leap of faith that Askarov would be
if I'm moving Saros this summer, I think you probably bring up Askarov and. You know, you might throw him into the deep end a little bit. But
As the backup,
yes.
And then you would have to find another number three that you could have in the bullpen that's flexible enough to keep in Milwaukee. That's tricky because you have to have like a two-way contract.
That could be Troy Grosnick, couldn't it?
Well, he's never played in the NHL.
Oh, okay. So you want a guy with NHL experience.
I would like to have another insurance policy who's played some NHL games. It's kind of like... Calvin Pickard.
I was going to say, how about Calvin Pickard?
Calvin Pickard is...
Chet Pickard didn't work out in this organization.
Chet Pickard did not work out.
What about Calvin?
That's another cautionary tale. They've used first-round picks on goalies twice, and they both busted.
Yes.
Not even able to play in the NHL.
So.
But, and then the other part of the equation is, okay, what would you have to get for Saros to go in that direction? Because all this would have to go down quick, because Lankinen is a free agent.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you have some sort of agreement with Lankinen and saying, can you hang out and not sign on the first day of free agency? Because I don't know if you can get him to do that, right? He's going to hit the market.
Yeah.
I don't know what the market is.
Right.
And I don't know how fair it is of you to ask him to do that.
100%. So you'd almost have to make that call early to make that happen.
I mean, look.
Practically.
I went down a really weird rabbit hole today. I don't know if you've ever gone to Cap Friendly's trade proposal machine.
I have not.
But on Cap Friendly,
sounds like a lot of fun.
I know what I'm doing this weekend.
It's Cap Friendly has a section where users can propose their own deals, and you know they have like a central registry option. So it's like based on the trade, whether or not it would actually go through if you have the number of contracts that your team has, et cetera. But then people can comment on them, like other users can comment on them. I've seen some doozies in there. I just went in there this morning. I was like, let's see what Predators related trades, and all of them were related to UC Saros. And I saw some doozies. I saw one that was, and I don't remember if it were actually worked or not. It was Saros, and we could talk about this in the next segment too. Saros, Fabro, Evangelista, and a random mid-round draft pick for Mitch Marner.
Hell no.
That's too much, right?
The Mitch Marner question is interesting. I mean, it's
well, let's
it's
maybe
top
we ta-
of mind.
Let's tackle the Mitch Marner mm-hmm. part of this because it's a yes. really exciting name to throw out
is
there.
Is that a good tease to go to break? Do we have to go to break?
I think that's where I'm going.
That's what we in the industry call a tease.
I
like that.
So we'll continue the Mitch Marner conversation. And also, not even just Mitch Marner, but players that could potentially be on the market that could fill in and address that need that Barry Trotz talked about in his press conference of getting deeper, getting faster, getting better, getting younger in the top nine. We'll get into that with Adam Vingan coming up next. Plus, if you have a question for Adam Vingan, get it in. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Caroline, Willie, DeMace, 1025-1063 The Game. Caroline, Willie, Dean Mays, tune into 102.5 The Game this Sunday for coverage of the All-Star Race at North Wilkesboro Speedway. Coverage will begin at 3:30 p.m. with the race starting at 4:30. Coverage also available on the 102.5 The Game app and at thegamenashville.com. Adam Vingan sticks around with us in studio talking the next steps for the Nashville Predators. And I was looking at a proposed trade from David Panyota. And it was UC Saros for Mitch Marner straight up. What do you make of Mitch Marner?
You don't see a lot of one-for-one trades like that anymore.
It's always got to be, that and future considerations.
Well, FCs. The famous, Willie will remember this, the famous tweet from Bob McKenzie. It happened, the Taylor Hall, Adam Larson trade, I think, happened on the same day as the PK Subban.
For Shea Weber.
Shea Weber trade.
Yeah, same day.
And it was, the trade is one-for-one, Taylor Hall for Adam Larson. You don't see a lot of one-for-one, even though Weber and Subban was a one-for-one trade.
Jones for Ryan Johansson was a one-for-one.
Yeah. But anyway, what do I think about Mitch Marner? Mitch Marner, and this is a word that gets thrown around too much in sports talk. We're all guilty of it, but it's true when talking about Mitch Marner. He is an elite player. I just shared this with you in over the past five regular seasons, there are only seven players in the NHL over the past five regular seasons. Or did I mess that up? Okay, yes, there we go. six players in the last five regular seasons who have scored more points than Mitch Marner. I'm going to list those players for you now. Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, Nathan MacKinnon, Artemi Panarin, Austin Matthews, and David Pastrnak. That's it. That's the whole list. Those are the only players in the league that have more points in the past since the 2019 season than Mitch Marner.
Not bad company.
He is fifth in assists in that span, but he is tied for 42nd in goals. Mitch Marner can score goals, but that is not his primary talent. His primary talent is being a facilitator, being a playmaker. He's also an excellent defensive forward. I believe he was a Selke Trophy finalist last year. He did not win, but he was a finalist last year. So Mitch Marner, he's a great player. I wonder if he is the type of player that helps the Predators with what they need, which is putting the puck in the net. Now, if you put him on the same line on the opposite wing of Philip Forsberg, does Philip Forsberg go from a 40 to 45 goal scorer, or in this case, the season a 48 goal scorer? Does he become a 55 goal scorer, having an elite setup man like Mitch Marner? That adds to your goal total. But does that help the rest of the lineup? It probably helps your power play too. But does it give you the necessary boost to get that scoring up that you so desperately need? And then that's why I'm not sure he is the right fit. And this is just looking at him from a player, you know, because I know there's a lot of talk out of Toronto. You know, look, he's the scapegoat right now. It's cyclical. He's the scapegoat. He's got 1 year left on his deal. He's a hometown kid. You know, things haven't been going well. You know, he actually produces a lot of points in the playoffs just based on number of points and number of games. But I felt like this year, especially when Austin Matthews was out for a few games and William Nylander was out for a few games, Marner did not step up and take over when they needed him.
That was
the most.
A big narrative.
So, sure. You know, I just want, look, players like Marner are not available via trade very often. I mean, the last time we saw something like this was when Matthew Tkachuk was moved from Calgary to Florida two summers ago.
And that's what I said is probably the Predators' cash cow to finding that elite forward is, where is your Matthew Tkachuk?
Right. You need. Jared has said this, and I agree with him. You need to find a player who's fallen out of favor in his market, like, yes, Mitch Marner. Or a player who does not want to sign long term with his current,
right,
team,
which is the case,
like
with
Matthew
Tkachuk.
Yeah.
But Tkachuk, I think, had that winning edge.
Yes.
That Marner, lack.
He, right, was just coming off of like a 104 point season.
Jeez.
You know, Tkachuk, and he ended up having 100 points again in his first year in Florida. Of course, you saw what they did last year, going to the Stanley Cup final, and he was excellent throughout that run. You know, we were talking about this earlier. Like, if we want to use the Matthew Tkachuk trade as a framework for a potential Mitch Marner trade. Now, you're right, Willie, when you told me that the Flames were desperate. They had to move off of Tkachuk because he wasn't going to re-sign.
It put him in a tough negotiating position.
Right. But, you know, the Panthers, I remember when the details of that trade leaked, and I was like, they're giving up Jonathan Huberdeau and Mackenzie Weegar for a team that's desperate to get, like Florida. I mean, Calgary is desperate. I thought you could get away with giving up lesser players than the Panthers did. Huberdeau was fifth in MVP voting in his final season in Florida. Very good player.
He had a huge year. And that was not coincidentally, maybe, the Andrew Brunette year.
Because after he left Brunette and he went to Daryl Sutter, his value went...
Now he's one of the biggest busts in the game.
Yeah, from a contract, like points per dollar standpoint, whatever you want to say.
And
it's
that's
not,
for two different coaches. Yeah, so it's not just Sutter.
Right, it's not good. But so let's just I'm wondering.
And Mackenzie Weegar was the other part.
Yes.
Another good, solid top four defenseman who hasn't performed as well for Calgary. Part of it was Florida had to trade some money.
Yes.
To have enough space to bring in Tkachuk's now, what, $10-plus million contract?
He makes
over 10.
Nine and a half?
Okay.
But, yeah, you're right about that. And I'm just wondering, like, okay, so if we're just looking at the pieces in the trade, because there's a lot of context in there, too. But if you're looking at the pieces of the trade, if you're trying to get Mitch Marner from Toronto, if UC Saros is your Jonathan Huberdeau, like, okay, then I think the trade was Tkachuk, and I think there was a like a mid-round draft pick thrown in there for Jonathan Huberdeau, Mackenzie Weegar, a prospect by the name of Cole Schwint, I believe, who was had like 40 points in the American League that previous year, and a first-round draft pick. Like, I think Florida got a first-round draft pick out of that deal. So, Calgary got a first-round draft pick out of that deal. So if it's, you know, if Saros is your Huberdeau, who is your Weegar? You know, who's your prospect going back? I mean, it's not a perfect comparison, I know. But I'm trying to build this deal.
Both teams, I think, are in a position to where it might be exploratory, but it's not, I've got to trade this guy.
Right.
Although, with all of that noise right now in Toronto, I wonder if they've hit a point of no return. And that to me is where, if I'm going to entertain this, I'm trying to take advantage of that point.
Totally.
I want to get him for less than market value. And part of it is because he's already owed 10.9. If part of the reason you want to trade Saros is you want to save a little money, you're not saving any money with Marner. You're taking on a big contract with the burden of then having to go through the process of signing him to a long-term deal that is going to be north of $11 million a year.
Totally. And if you're paying a guy close to 12, if not at least north of 11, I need to know that you can show up in the playoffs. I need to know what you are, because I do have questions that if you take Mitch Marner away from Austin Matthews, away from Toronto, do you have as much production as you had in Toronto? Or, I mean, does it make you better?
I mean, that was the question that was asked about Jake Guentzel. That was the same question people asked about Jake Guentzel at the trade deadline. Is he going to be a productive player when he's no longer playing on the same line as Sidney Crosby? And I think he answered that question. He was really good for Carolina.
And now we'll see if Carolina can re-up
with
him.
He played with Sebastian Aho almost exclusively, and they were really good together. Like, and I'm of the mind that Mitch Marner is a good enough player that, yes, if he's not playing with Austin Matthews, who scored nearly 70 goals this year, maybe the point totals go down a little bit. But I'm not expecting him to go from a 95-point player to a 65-point player because he's not playing with Austin Matthews.
But
he's
still at a $12 million price tag, or close to $12 million after you inevitably sign him if you're going to make that move.
And he has 50 points in 57 playoff games. So if you're just looking at points and points per game,
it's not nothing.
But it's just that
The eye test.
Yes, the eye test. Like I said, this year they didn't have Matthews for numerous games in the playoffs. They didn't have Nylander at the beginning of that series. But Matthews had a signature moment in that series. Nylander had a signature moment in that series. Marner did not. And that's the knock, is that, you know, this was his chance to be the guy and lift the Maple Leafs past when they didn't have Matthews and Nylander at certain points and was not able to do it.
I think we need to say, too, for those that maybe haven't followed the Maple Leafs that closely, part of the reason they haven't won in the playoffs is, like Carolina, they have had a musical chairs of goalies and never had the goalie.
They're also paying four players like half of the cap, which is not a sustainable model.
You know, other players that have been injured, they are on LTIR. They've tried to, you know, just rig up all kinds of things around the cap to try to give themselves –
and that's
the best chance to win each year, but they have not had the goalie. So it's a little bit ironic, too, that Toronto is looking to trade goal scoring for goaltending, and here we're talking about we haven't won, so we've got to have goal scorers, and we'll trade you the goaltender. So, like, how would that be floated around in Toronto? Would people in a talk show in Toronto, in our bizarro world, would they be hopping at the chance to say, I'll take Saros for $5 million and trade you Marner for 10.9 and a 1-for-1?
So Kevin McGrann.
Who do you think would win that? How would that go over nationally in a 1-for-1?
Kevin McGrann, who is the Maple Leafs reporter for the Toronto Star, which is one of the major newspapers in Toronto, had a story the other day looking at potential landing spots for Marner, and he mentioned Saros. And
it's been kicked around by a lot of people, right?
Right. He said the Leafs would want more in return than just Saros. Maybe center Colton Sissons or defenseman Dante Fabbro would need to be included. The Predators also have 9 picks in the first 5 rounds this year and 5 in the first 3 next year if Brad Treliving, their general manager, is looking for a way to restock the prospect pool.
Okay. Now, this I want everybody to go into their context of their fantasy football league, or fantasy baseball, whatever you play, when you get into trade talks with your buddy. Because that is a very Toronto-based perspective there. Mm-hmm. Oh, I want more than just Saros. Just Saros, one of the best goalies in the league for the last 4 years, at $5 million. If I'm looking at it from Nashville's perspective, I want more than Marner. I want, give me Joseph Woll
with Marner.
Who's their young goalie.
Who is their young goalie that it could give me some insurance in the post-Saros era.
And in that case, you could have...
So you want more. Everybody wants more. Like in fantasy football, we used to have a fantasy... There's always a guy in everybody's league that is wanting to trade you his spare parts for your best player.
I did that this year. I'm that guy in my... In my
and you try to find the sucker that will do it, right? There's always the guy that's got too many things going on in life. He's not paying that much attention to his roster. You exploit that guy, and everybody in the league goes nuts. Go, what are you doing?
I can't remember
Why did you just trade your best player for three spare parts?
I can't remember who I acquired in that trade, but I know that the player I sent to that guy was Miles Sanders, who was really bad for the Panthers. And I was like, I came out ahead on this one, but I see your point. I do like the idea.
I think it's really intriguing. Philosophical one for one.
Right. I like the idea of Joseph Woll because then you get that insurance to keep Askarov in the American League.
And you
can keep Lankinen, and you have a Woll Lankinen tandem. Woll has been really good in spurts, but he is injury prone. That's my concern. But
that's why I'll take Lankinen to go along tonight.
Yeah. Anyway, no, it's
this isn't going away anytime soon.
No. We've got plenty of time to get.
And
off.
I'm open minded, but I'm still pro. I'm still until further notice. Re-signing, going down the road of trying to re-sign Saros for the best deal.
And I think the important thing to mention here, too, is really because you bring up, you know, Toronto, Carolina, they're talking about how the goaltending hasn't been good enough, and now here we're talking about how you want to trade away the goaltender to find more scoring. It's not just about trading away the goaltender. It's trading away the goaltender because you need to find more scoring, and also because you feel like the next heir apparent to that position is, you know, up and coming. With the idea
you
that
hope.
Askarov is going to turn into Saros, Rene, or better, you know?
And I have faith in the Predators to be able to do that just because they have a track record of developing great goaltenders,
yeah.
Just like they have a track record of developing great defensemen.
But all of those guys were not really starters until mid-20s, mm-hmm. And Askarov is still 3 years from being in his mid-20s.
Yeah, I mean, it's look,
they marinate. They have marinated their goalies in the development.
One
process.
Could say they could over marinate. I've heard them over marinating goalies, not just marinating.
Yeah,
over.
Barry Trotz did use over marinating as a term.
Or you could just throw them in the deep end and hope for the best.
That's not what they've done, but they could.
Adam, appreciate you for stepping by.
My
Always
pleasure.
Appreciate your insight. You are the absolute best, and we'll catch up with you soon.
All right, guys.
All right, sounds great. Appreciate you. Okay, coming up next, we got to take a deep dive into Willie's Scrolls because we had a conversation earlier this week of what is kind of the line of success for J.C. Latham? What would we call, okay, good, solid pick. What would we call an absolute home run for J.C. Latham? We'll take a little bit of a deep dive into the history of top 10 picks and maybe you know, use that to frame our judgment and argument there. So we'll get into that coming up next. Caroline Willie D. Mays, 1025-1063 The Game.
What's up, Oos? Main event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's jump.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.